Hey everybody, welcome to Comedy on Vinyl. Thanks for your patience. It's obviously been a little while since we've had an episode. This one, as you can hear, was supposed to come out before Thanksgiving, but that just didn't happen. This week is going to be our first of many Mel Brooks-related episodes. This is Young Frankenstein. I have a copy of the soundtrack, so that was our excuse to talk about Young Frankenstein. So yeah, please enjoy and stick around. We've got a number of new episodes coming up, and we've got some special guest stars, some non-regulars that are coming up from other podcasts, from movies and film, all that good stuff. So again, thanks for sticking around. Enjoy this episode featuring Young Frankenstein.
Are there any last questions before we leave?
Dr. Frankenstein.
Yes?
Isn't it true that Darwin preserved a piece of vermicelli in a glass case until by some extraordinary means it actually began to move with a voluntary motion?
Are you speaking of the worm or the spaghetti?
Why, the worm, sir.
Yes, it seems to me I did read something of that incident when I was a student, but you have to remember that a worm, with very few exceptions, is not a human being.
But wasn't that the whole basis of your grandfather's work, sir? The reanimation of dead tissue?
My grandfather was a very sick man.
But as a Frankenstein, aren't you the least bit curious about it? Doesn't the bringing back to life what was once dead hold any intrigue for you?
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind. Dead is dead.
But look at what has been done with hearts and kidneys.
Hearts and kidneys are tinker toys. I'm talking about the central nervous system.
But, sir...
I am a scientist, not a philosopher. You have more chance of reanimating this scalpel than you have of mending a broken nervous system.
But what about your grandfather's work, sir?
My grandfather's work was doo-doo! Class is dismissed.
That was really good. All right, everybody. Hi. Welcome to Comedy on Vinyl. This week is Thanksgiving week. So, of course, we are going to be talking about Young Frankenstein.
That makes sense to me.
Yummy.
Yeah.
Because we're thankful for Mel Brooks.
Exactly. Nice. I'm sorry for those noises, everybody. I'm trying to fix my microphone
here. Okay. Jason, get it out of your butt.
Oh, God. Okay, there we go. So, this week we have with us... Dan Gomiller.
Hey.
Ari Jarvis.
Hello.
And for the first time officially, Jennifer Ann Smith.
Hello.
Hi, Jennifer Ann Smith. Are you enjoying yourself?
What does the N stand for?
Yes.
God damn it, it's Ann. God damn it. All right, so, yeah, this week...
Ari doesn't know her letters.
No, she doesn't. So this week we were talking about Young Frankenstein. Why?
Why?
I don't know. so it's another excuse. I bought the soundtrack, and the soundtrack, obviously, it has sound clips and some of the music, not that much music from the movie. Ari thought I might be talking about the musical. She was a little confused, right, before you got
quite
here?
Quite confused.
Yeah, I should have explained myself. I haven't heard all the musical yet, so I don't know.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh, I thought you had it.
No.
Let me try.
Mel Brooks, if you're listening, Jason is not a true fan.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Okay, that's too close to the microphone, sweetie.
You are.
Get your fucking face.
You are.
All right.
Nice.
I have these are not cue cards.
No.
These are, what are they called? Index cards. I have some notes here. Scalpel.
Nice. I like the Scalpo scene.
Scalpo
scene.
He's my favorite
Scalpo
Marx
so
brother.
Funny.
It's my favorite Marx brother, Scalpo.
Scalpo.
No?
It's gotta be hands down one of the top five scenes in the movie.
Oh yeah.
Just it's so funny.
Well, it's one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in my life.
Because it's so straight.
It's played straight and yet it's a completely over the top moment.
Yeah.
For
some of us who haven't seen it in a while.
I'm not telling you.
The part where he goes on this huge rant about being, you know, about Frankenstein.
Being a pure scientist.
And then at the end, he punctuates it by
stabbing
himself in the leg, and he just opens his hand, looks at it, puts back, and says, dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so good. It's just so pure. It's just
his Gene timing is amazing.
Yeah,
it's Gene Wilder's amazing. The look in his eyes, because he's not a comedian,
right?
He says that, right?
Like, right. He was one of those actors who didn't realize he was funny, and had to have people tell him that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not just funny, like brilliantly hilarious.
Yes. Yes.
But it was because he could keep it so straight.
Yes.
And that's a skill in and of itself.
You were talking about that with Phil Hartman too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love one of my favorite quotes is Mel Brooks saying that he would never have started acting in his movies if Gene Wilder had just stayed with him.
Right.
Yep. You wouldn't have needed to, yeah.
You can't really go wrong. And the one of the reasons I want to do this is I just finished reading Simon Pegg's autobiography, and he talks in it specifically about he had not the soundtrack, but apparently you could buy the whole movie. The whole soundtrack to the movie, meaning the whole thing, on LP, like vinyl.
I would totally have listened to that.
Absolutely. Because I think we've talked about this before. We've all done that with movies or TV shows, right? Dan, you had Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Did you record it or your dad recorded
it? Dad recorded it.
Okay, and so you could just sit there and listen to the movie. I don't know why you want to, but I wanted to do the same thing. I would record TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
What did you do, Ari?
Oh, West Side Story.
Nice.
I know exactly. I went and saw it for, was it the 50th anniversary, and I knew all the words. That's Emperor's New Groove.
Really?
For my senior year of high school, I just listened to that on loop, no matter what doing. I was in the dark room, I was riding my bike, I was walking home.
Well, I guess that kind of makes sense, because like a lot of times you just turn the TV on and then you go do something, so you're not watching it anyway, so what's the difference, really?
Especially nowadays, we are that generation.
We are definitely that generation.
Oh, yeah.
Or you get lulled to sleep by TV shows, too.
Sure. Right now we've been watching Archer and Modern Family every night.
I'm just falling asleep to
death.
Yeah. Did you ever do that, Sweetie? I'm sorry, I'm calling her Sweetie. Jennifer's my girlfriend.
Okay, now we got some nepotism going on up in here. She's going to get special treatment.
That's why you're on my podcast.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm vice president of this podcast now, suckers.
Did you ever record any TV shows like that, or movies?
We really were very limited to the amount of VHS tapes that my parents would buy, let alone have us recording stuff onto, so not really.
No? You didn't, put a tape recorder up to the TV and...
No, we didn't. I wasn't really... My dad got really possessive of recording equipment, so...
That's funny. Even though he was out of the DJ business by then.
Yeah, right? I mean, I had a Fisher-Price,
one of those
tape recorder.
Brown ones?
The brown?
Yeah, but I mostly just listen to music that I shared from people who had the tapes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Old school pirating.
Right, that's good.
I just want to add that Jen probably had a life.
Right, that is also true. That is also true. Dan
and friends?
I did. It wasn't TV, but I did listen to, and I know this sounds so... silly.
It already does, yeah. Keep going.
I listened to... my parents went to go see Les Miserables, and we listened to the soundtrack to it over and over. Because they told us, the whole story of the play, because they really loved it the first time they saw it. And then, so we were picturing it, and we're kind of, enwrapped in the story, because my parents are pretty good storytellers. Mm-hmm. So then, we would just listen to the soundtrack to it over and over again.
That's awesome. It was the entire thing, though, right?
Yeah,
it has the entire play.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that makes sense.
Because the whole thing, it's not an opera, technically, but it
might
is.
As well be.
Yeah, they sing everything.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's more of, it's more accessible than a lot of operas are.
It's not in Italian, for one.
That is one.
Yeah, you can understand the words.
Yay.
All right, that makes sense. Well, then we've all done that, and so has Simon Pegg. And to bring it back to Simon Pegg, which is absolutely necessary. No, but that clearly, I mean, and I watched this again just before we started this, but, the more I watch it, the more I realize how much Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, are directly, linked to it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because... Again, this is the first one of Mel Brooks' movies that came out just after Blazing Saddles, the same year. Where Blazing Saddles is, 100% what he likes to call them spoofs, but 100% parody. You know, I mean, it's loving in its own way, but it's not as loving as Young Frankenstein. You know, and Young Frankenstein
It's sweet.
Yeah, and it is, it's almost a sequel. It might as well be, except for the comedic elements, you know?
Right, exactly.
The acting's all good. Some of the moments are, just... brilliant, when right at the end when they wrap it up by having Victor transfer his or not Victor Friedrich transfer his part of his brain over to the monster. You know,
right,
like
yeah.
that whole part is like really emotional and really funny and really good.
Well, it's funny when I think about it. Like, this was never my favorite. It was right. my mom's favorite. She, like, was gaga over it, so she made us watch it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite was always, like, Spaceballs
sure.
or Blazing Saddles
mm-hmm.
or even High Anxiety.
Yeah.
Never Dead and Loving It.
Right.
Never.
Oh, God, no, don't.
but
Let
I
Let us
think
not the, speak of those things.
Yes. I think the reason why it wasn't my favorite is because it's played so... straight.
Sure, yeah.
And I was bored.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't understand what was going on. I'm like, how is this funny?
Right, and I was scared. So I knew it was funny, but I was scared of it a little bit as a kid.
I knew it was funny, but I think I knew that there was probably something I was missing, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I mean, yeah, there's, you get all the poop jokes.
Yep,
but,
that's true.
You don't, you know. There's a lot of sex jokes that you're not going to get when you're.
Schmunchnicker, no. I got. My mom explained.
My
them
mom
to me.
Explained them to me.
Yeah.
Wait, and that's a good thing.
I'm like, okay. Well, funny, when I was in high school, I was like, oh, I should watch this again and see
yeah.
if I can understand what the fuck is so great about it.
Right.
And so I put in my mom's VHS, and it broke. And everyone said that I broke it on purpose.
Aww.
Because I hated the movie. It's like, no, I did it. I promise.
Oh, that's not fair.
So I think when the DVD came out, I got it for my mom.
That's hilarious. I have two copies of it. I don't know why I have two. I somehow got a second one. Because
you really love it.
I really, really love it.
You want to be able to, like, watch it in stereo.
And
exactly.
hold it.
Yeah.
And stroke it.
Yeah, while I listen, while yes. I watch the movie, I just pet the other DVD.
The other DVD. That's all Jen's going to add to most of these. Stupid. You guys are so retarded.
God damn it.
That's how you...
Well, I don't know. I think it's a term of endearment for me because
yes,
I was watching the movie again earlier, and I was just saying stupid, but those are the parts where I was laughing really hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
well, that's what I do when I watch Conan. Same thing. Like,
yeah,
really
it definitely.
Brilliant, you know?
There's nothing here but books and papers. Books and papers? It is! This is my grandfather's private library. I feel it! Look! Look at this! Change the poles from plus to minus, and from minus to plus. I alone succeeded in discovering the secret of bestowing life. Nay, even more, I myself became capable of bestowing animation upon lifeless matter. It cuts wax!
It's really weird having index cards in front of me because
yeah.
I have the whole movie pretty much memorized.
You just want to do it justice.
Who else in the room wants to have sex with Madeline Kahn? Anybody else?
Me?
All right, all hands are raised.
Because I loved Madeline Kahn, and my mom's favorite character was Terry Garr.
Yeah.
And I think we had a rivalry.
That's an understandable rivalry.
And I don't care about Peter Boyle. I mean, he's great. It's just I didn't
sure.
have a crush on him.
Well,
I still
right.
wanted her to end up with Gene Wilder. Because
right.
I always had a crush on Gene Wilder.
Sure, yeah.
So I think I felt gypped in the end.
I'm sorry. You should give Mel a letter.
I will.
You should.
I wrote the alternate ending.
I think at this point, Gene Wilder was actually dating Terry Garr throughout the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can kind of see it if you watch some of the... Well, you can see it in the movie, but you can see it in some of the outtakes and stuff, too.
It would be really frustrating if they weren't dating yet at that point, I think.
Yeah, no, because of all the... Yeah.
Yeah.
She's kissing his fingers.
There's been a lot of tension there.
Yeah.
It's funny because... Yeah. Because we're going to be doing our podcast, Con Air.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, with my brother and sister, I'll say, put the bunny back.
That's awesome. That's good. I like that. That's good. Oh, that's funny. This is just more distracting than anything else. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just keep looking.
Wait, are we? Do you have the soundtrack on vinyl?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
I'm just confused.
You don't even.
No, I found the soundtrack, and I was going to listen to it, but since it was an excuse to talk about the movie, I just watched the movie.
Oh, got it.
You know, and I know what I really want is to find the full movie. I want to know. That's got to be what? I mean, that's a three. It's got to be like a three LP three set, disc, a three yeah. disc set. Like, oh, yeah, where the yeah. fuck are you going to find that? So I've got to tweet Simon Pegg and ask him where he got it.
LPs aren't called discs, are they? Even though they are mm-hmm. in the shape of a disc.
No, they're not. Yeah, we're used to calling them discs. They're just, what are they called?
Three frisbees.
Three frisbees. A frizz.
But
three frizz set.
Yeah, because they always, like, they don't even say, like, on the record, disc one, disc two. They say side one, side two.
And then if they have multiple discs,
it's side three, side four.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
This is not a cube.
So it would
or
be
a
six-sided.
No, it's not. I'm trying to think. Fuck, I was going to go somewhere. I was going to say something.
You can go. It's fine.
Well, thank you, yeah. Jen. Thank you so much. Such an asshole.
Helpful.
Does anybody here have a favorite joke from the movie? We can do that. We can say that. Here, Jen, you can look at the cards.
Shut up.
This is serving purpose.
Igor. The line with Igor with the damn your eyes, I always...
That was funny.
And Abby Normal.
Yep. Yeah, that is...
Abby someone.
That is probably the best joke in the movie. But I just think this movie... First of all, I mean, we can talk about the fact that this is the first one Mel Brooks didn't write. You know, he
Who
didn't...
Wrote it?
Gene Wilder.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, Mel Brooks, I'm sure, helped write it. I don't remember who gets credit. I can go grab the album. But I know Gene Wilder is... He wrote the screenplay first. And had he's like, Mel, I have this idea, ran it past him, and then they just kind of move forward and
That's
got it.
That's probably shot. Why it's less tongue-in-cheek. Or
right.
It's more, was it more tongue-in-cheek and less just blatant?
Over, yeah.
There's more for the actor there, you know? And
yeah.
it's written with that in mind. But, I mean, luckily, it doesn't suffer from that. That's actually a bonus
That's
for
a,
it.
A big bonus, yeah.
And it is just so funny to me that Gene Wilder is one of those guys that started out as a person who didn't know he was funny. Got spotted on stage, and somebody told him, I'm sorry, you're funny.
Yeah.
that would be a big shock if that's not what you're intending.
Yeah, that's what you're going for.
Right?
I mean,
like, I was doing Macbeth.
Right, he was in the actor's studio.
God damn it.
You know, he was in the actor's studio at the same time a lot of those other guys were.
Yeah.
And imagine, it's like, okay, all right, fine. And then he does Bonnie and Clyde, which is a big drama, but he's like, he's funny in that, too. So
that's the thing. I mean, going back, sincerity.
You are, you are.
Like, yeah. So many... I'm going to disregard Al Pacino, considering Jack and Jill fiasco, but, like, Robert De Niro is great at comedy. Christopher Walken is great at comedy.
I saw him the other day.
Really?
Yes.
Just walking down the street?
Yes.
Nice.
That would weird me out, because he's not the... I don't picture him...
Nope.
Outside.
Alive.
No, it weirded me out.
He's a cartoon.
Not in a cave
yep,
or
it made
a
me
mansion,
uncomfortable.
A dark mansion.
I thought he's like saran wrapped somewhere.
Yeah,
they only
put
bring
him away
him out
between
for
things.
He was in all black and like a black knit cap.
Well,
he was dressed like
yeah.
a hipster. It was weird.
Was it in Los Feliz?
No, believe it or not. It was over by Beverly Center, so.
I would like to buy a hot dog.
Oh my god, if he came into the bakery, I'd freak out.
Yeah, right?
It would be like. Existential crisis all over again.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to. I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Julie and I saw Tarantino over at Starbucks.
Really?
We're like, okay.
You don't picture people of that.
No.
No.
They do. They don't do normal things.
No.
No.
No. I haven't seen Mel Brooks.
They have people to do normal things for them.
I wish Jeremy was here. I won't tell the story, but next time we do a Mel Brooks thing, he got to meet Mel Brooks and talk
nice.
To him, like he saw at a video store. He's got a very good story about it. I didn't really get to meet him. I got to see him.
Well, also, I mean, he's not an actor, but Max Brooks,
if
you read, like, Zombie Survival Guide or World War Z, he's the same way. He does not consider himself a comedian in any way, but he's got some hilarious, like, darkly hilarious bits because he's sincere about it.
Sure.
And he probably got some of that from his dad.
Yeah, no, I would imagine. I can't.
It's so weird, though. They're not at all similar. I would
That's
not.
So funny.
Like, for a long time, I was like, they're not related. They just have the same last name.
Right, right. Yeah, but once you look at them,
yes,
boy,
it's
clear. Yeah, man, I wouldn't want that pressure to be Mel Brooks' son. I'm so glad I'm not.
I know, right?
That's probably why he didn't go for, like, any of his dad's style.
Oh, yeah. He would just be
smart.
Compared.
Do your own thing.
Yeah.
But. Yeah.
I don't direct comedy movies, Dad.
I know this Young Frankenstein has really great, like, one-liners, but I don't really think of them as... I don't really think, like, oh, that's a great joke, or that's a great joke.
It's very cohesive.
Yeah. It kind of... You can't really take one piece out, but I think my favorite scene... And it's just because I've always had a crush on Gene Hackman.
Mm-hmm.
It's always that scene.
God, that is
like,
such
and I've
a great
always
scene.
Felt so bad for him. I never thought it was like, haha, funny. I was like,
no, it's so sad.
He's so lonely.
it was such a good. He was just so happy to do it too. He's really excited
really?
To be in that movie. Yeah, like he'd wanted to do comedy. He's one of those guys who hadn't been tested that way. I think at this point he'd already done The French Connection and shit, you know. And so it's kind of like. Yeah, the chance to... But at the same time, again, he plays it so straight.
Yes.
Are you talking about the scene at the beginning?
No, it's the blind guy.
The blind guy.
Oh, him, that's right.
Really?
Yeah.
That Gene Hackman. Yeah, that's Gene Hackman. You didn't know that?
No.
That's right. That
really?
Is...
No.
Cigars!
Yeah, that makes sense.
Such a good one.
I see that now.
Yeah. What year was this?
74.
70?
Mm-hmm. I think it came out 74 or 75. It was right after Blazing Saddles.
When was Superman...
79 or 80.
Oh, so.
So it wasn't that long after. Because
that's where he was like, he's got a kind of a comedic role, but not.
Right.
It's not Ned Beatty.
Right.
But he's funny.
Definitely.
Because he's sincere.
Sure, yeah.
This is what Adam Sandler, I mean, he used to get it, but now it's
like... He did
like,
it once or twice. Yep.
Jack and Jill. Ah.
Oh, God. Did you see it? You didn't see it.
No. Okay. Don't pay money for that.
You know what's funny, though, is someone pointed out, there was that one episode of South Park where Cartman dressed up like a robot called Osmo to embarrass Butters.
Uh-huh.
And then the Hollywood steals him to be a comedy writing machine, and it's all movies about Adam Sandler. One of them is Adam Sandler... has a really annoying sister who is also played by Adam Sandler.
Holy shit.
Years before this movie came out.
They totally stole it.
Holy shit.
People are like, wow, what a coincidence. Like, they're prescient. I'm like, no. Rob Schneider and Adam Sandler were sitting at home, high, watching South Park, saying, holy shit, we should do that.
Yep. In the voice of a South Park character.
Yep.
Whoa.
Did you know all in the... actually, let's go back to this. Have any of you guys seen the original Frankenstein? I mean, I hadn't seen it until college, so I felt like an asshole for not seeing it until college.
I've never seen it all the way through.
Okay.
Watched it.
Yeah.
I haven't read the whole book. I read the, Classics Illustrated. And
whatever.
It still made me want to slit my wrist.
I bet. Yeah, I hear it's much more depressing.
Yes.
But
it is.
This movie does follow in the style of the original so much, and it uses
very
the original
much.
Props. The props from the original movie are in that fucking basement.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were in a guy's garage. The guy who did the equipment, he held
on
to
it. Oh, that's right. I heard about that. That's
yeah.
Right. Like, the whole, like...
Yeah, the electric thing.
Yeah.
And all that good stuff.
Jacob's Ladder.
Sure, is that what that's called?
Yeah.
Jacob's Ladder. Okay.
It has a name? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, yeah.
But,
yeah, we pretend to know things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that... Really? Oh, that's right, I knew that.
Yeah, but I mean, that lends to the authenticity of it, so is it looking like it's any... You know, they were not going to let them shoot it in black and white for a long time.
Why?
Because it was inconvenient for the studio, and they thought people wouldn't be... They thought people would be turned away by black and white. Yeah.
Because at that point, color... There had been so many colored movies, though.
You say colored?
They're called American movies.
Jason Klum.
But I heard colored.
I heard that too.
I heard it too.
I said that, but that is not what it meant.
Okay, keep going. Color film.
Ass. You really suck.
I
don't a lot.
Yeah. Keep going.
Can I?
Color film.
Sorry, sir.
That you could... Wouldn't that be, like, the beginning of the time that you really could do that as an artistic decision?
You would think so,
yeah.
But...
Like, that wasn't really the
comedy.
Main attraction of seeing a movie. It's not like, oh, there's a lot of movies in black and white,
mm-hmm.
but there's a few in color. Let's go see the ones in color.
Right.
Like, it was past that.
But at this time, it was 15... It was only 15 years into exclusive color. Because in the 60s, they were still making black and white
films.
That's
long enough to turn it into a hipster thing, though.
Yeah, that is very true. But
Dan
was making
the
point.
I think the problem is that, probably with the studios, is that... If it was... Yeah, if it was, like, a drama, they're doing that, it means something.
Yeah.
But a comedy in black and white just doesn't make sense.
Right.
Even though...
because comedies are poppy.
It's important to do that because it is, if nothing else, a spiritual sequel.
Right, right.
And I am going to convince him that he is loved, even at the cost of my own life. No matter what you hear in there, no matter how cruelly I beg you, no matter how terribly I may scream, do not open this door or you will undo everything I've worked for. Do you understand? Do not open this door.
Yes, Doctor.
Nice working with you.
Get me out. Let me out of here. Get me the hell out of here. What's the matter with you people? I was joking! Don't you know a joke when you hear one? Open this goddamn door, I'll kick your rotten heads in! Mommy!
And, yeah, but I mean, if you look at it, the way it's lit just so much like the original films.
Yeah.
Again, it's a kind of attention to detail that I'm just going to keep bringing it back to Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright. Like, those films are just, like, they're completely faithful to everything.
Who was the producer of Young Frankenstein?
Give me a second. You guys talk about something.
Go grab the album.
Something? What about that something?
Yeah, it's pretty.
Something. What else is in it?
I don't want to say what I'm
talking about. Any other Frankenstein?
Oh, the DVD's right in here.
Oh, Fox.
We haven't talked about Marty Feldman that much.
Yeah.
Not yet. We will.
Oh,
he's a genius.
Taffeta, darling.
Sexy.
That might be, I don't know if that's my favorite scene, but that is, if only because I can relate to that scene so much.
Yeah. It's like the elbows.
Uh-huh. And then there's a scene later, which I had never noticed till Mel Brooks pointed it out, when he's going to go give her a kiss, and she's, no tongues.
Yes.
And he starts talking without using his tongue.
Uh-huh.
Which I had never noticed until Mel Brooks pointed
it out. Mm-hmm. Oh, so much.
So good. Yeah, who is the actual producer, the gentleman or gentlewoman who produced this? There's a lot of really cool photos in here. There's a picture of Mel Brooks wearing a Blazing Saddles.
Produced by Michael Gruskoff.
Good old Michael Gruskoff. But yeah, it was a Fox movie.
Now, is this just like, because, you know, his other ones are kind of style, like genre parodies.
Sure.
Is this just strictly, you know, making fun of...
Well, it's a classic style.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like That's a classic
true.
Movie.
But it just seems like... Frankenstein,
yeah.
As opposed to, like...
No, it is. It is. It's more... I mean, that's why he called it... that's why he strictly made sure it's still based on Mary Shelley's. Like, that wasn't a joke. Mel Brooks, like, took that part seriously. He seemed to really take this one seriously, because he wanted to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Was it popular?
Yeah. Yeah, it did really well, from what I recall. It did better initially than Blazing Saddles. I think... partially because of Blazing Saddle's success, though, and then you repeating a lot of the cast, so I think a lot of people reacted to that. Originally, too, also, I don't know if you've ever heard the story that the putting on the Ritz scene almost, well, it didn't almost not make it, but that Mel Brooks made him argue for it, like, till he was blue in the face.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
He's like, no, you know what, this is silly, this is ridiculous, we're not doing this kind of movie, we're not putting this in here. And then Gene Wilder just screamed and just gave him shit about it, and he's like, I just wanted to make sure you meant it, that you really wanted to be in the movie. Because it is a scene that is not entirely out of place, and there is actually a lot of subtext in it, and again, it's perfect, but it is ridiculously silly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you want to know that he's going to commit to it when he plays it, commit to it if in the rewrites or whatever, and I think he just wanted to just
you wanted
test
to make
him.
Sure.
And also, from what I hear, Mel Brooks likes to fuck with people.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot.
Well, it's really funny to me that Mel Brooks would actually say something was too silly to put in anything.
Exactly.
And then secondly, it's really also weird to me, but amazing, that something like them dressing up like they're in a 40s stage show would actually, like, humanize both of their characters a little bit, even though it is really stupid.
Yeah.
But it's, like, but it's perfect, too, and it's genius.
Seems like that's in every single one of his movies.
Yeah.
There's always some sort of stage show.
Yeah, no, he does that. He's said that. Once you got to do it at the end, what does he say? At the end of the second act, make sure you have a musical number. He always wants a musical number. So the idea that he would argue against it is even funnier.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, it makes sense to want to get that commitment. He wanted to make sure that he didn't just throw that in because he thought,
he might be funny.
Yeah. Or that he might be, like, you know, trying to throw a bone to Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
And Mel
Brooks right.
Like, no.
Make sure we want to really make your movie.
Yeah.
But I just don't see how it could be taken out.
No.
At all.
No, not at all.
It's so pivotal to yeah. I don't know.
It's climax, yeah.
See, I don't know if... Do they... They don't have something like that in the actual Frankenstein movie, right? This is more of a reference to King Kong.
Right, yeah, it's a lot like King Kong.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because that's what I always got from it, is like they're kind of making fun of the concept of King Kong, but instead of just tying them up and showing everyone, it's Man About Town, dancing and singing.
The other movies are everything that kind of happens before that part of the movie. Like once Frankenstein's locked up in Young Frankenstein, that's essentially the point where the other Frankenstein movies end. The other Frankenstein movies do just take place in the castle. He kind of goes apeshit.
He doesn't die in the movies?
In there, yeah, he does die.
He does.
Yeah. Frankenstein does. The monster does die, but like the point where he's like locked up is equivalent to where he would die in the other movies or get caught or whatever the fuck happens.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. And then so they use that as the first two-thirds of the movie. And then, yeah.
And it's really funny how a movie like the actual Frankenstein would have had the ending much closer to the climax, and there would be much less wrap-up afterwards.
Sure, yeah, right.
But this one, it's like they got to the climax, and then right after, they just sort of blew off the whole, is he going to die or not? And it's like, oh, okay.
Right.
And then they have a lot of just funny nonsense afterwards to wrap
it
up.
The wedding night.
Yeah, yeah, just a whole bunch of really stupid jokes just to really
undies.
Calm me down afterwards.
She says poo-poo undies. And then
yes.
Mel Brooks said that she made that line up. But
of course
I'm not
she
sure. That doesn't entirely surprise me.
You don't think that Gene Wilder wrote that into script?
I think he did.
I grabbed the script off my wall.
I got a new hamper for your shirts and one just for your poo-poo undies and socks.
So good.
I like the contrast and of Madeline Kahn and Cloris Leachman.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cloris Leachman, I've been in love with Madeline Kahn my whole life.
Sure.
But Cloris Leachman I identify with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm much more of the, like, Nia Vardalos, Amy Sedaris sort of, I don't want to be in the spotlight unless I'm, you know, made to look. Because if you gussy me up, then I can be, you know, not as pretty as they try to make me, but if I get dressed down, I can still be funny.
Right.
And I think that's where Cloris Leachman comes in.
Sure.
It's like in High Anxiety and in this one where it's like she's just brilliant and she's hilarious. And then there's Madeline Kahn, who is amazing at pulling off that sexy femme fatale but hilariously funny.
Yeah.
And they're both great in their own right, but it's just interesting how they go the different directions.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. It seems to me like, I don't know what they're doing to make that work. I can't because Cloris Leachman is actually
not unattractive.
She's hot, you know, but she just, I guess that's what works best for her, and that's the way she sees characters, and to her that must be how she sees acting.
Well, here's the Amy Sedaris is like that.
Yeah.
Because
she did that photo shoot where she made herself look beat up, and then... just a funny aside, we were listening to which one was it?
David Sedaris. Oh, which one was it? I don't remember. Dress Your Family in Corduroy or something
like that, where he talks about afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
She kept her makeup on and went to a
She was in the subway.
Was it in the subway?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and someone's like,
"What happened? Are
you okay?" And she's like, "I'm in love."
She's a little demented. She's an extra level. She's beyond many, many people. But holy shit. And again, this is a period where we've got a movie with three standout female actors that just like they're just as good as anybody else in the film. It's clear. And then why now it's all of a sudden a big media thing to recognize. You know, it just weirds me out that it took that long when it's clear you're watching this movie. You watch any Mel Brooks movie, there's at least one brilliant woman.
Brilliant,
and it's usually Madeline Kahn, you know, and because he got it. He knew that women could be funny. I know several people, I will not name names, who just don't think women
tempted.
Could be funny. No.
I don't like him a little bit every time I think about that statement. It's total BS. He knows who he is.
Peter Falk movies, too.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've seen The Cheap Detective, right? Where
yeah.
It's like the majority of that cast is women.
Yep.
There's Eileen Heckard, there's Madeline Kahn, there's, mm-hmm. you know, Stalker Channing. And
like, yeah.
It goes on and on and on.
Yep.
And they're all brilliant.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, that it takes so long. And now it's a thing. Now that it's hip, you can talk about it all you want. And like, oh, women are funny now. That's what it kind of comes across as, you know?
They finally figured it out.
I mean, I guess I grew up with my mom, and so I knew all the comedians.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
You know, admired all the comedians, so it's weird to me that that's even a question.
Right, right. I mean, I know from personal experience that, like, well, just the way we're wired, I think you're going to identify with somebody of your own sex maybe more instantly. And so in your own brain, you're thinking, well, this is the person I would think I could be. This is the person I'm naturally going to think of, like, Gene Wilder first. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know, once you grow up a little bit, you kind of realize, like, there are plenty of actresses that I would love to be as good as.
Hell,
you know,
yeah,
I mean, if I could be as good as Madeline Kahn at anything, like that would just that would be, especially having that body. If I could have that body, man, I could get a lot of good things. a lot of dick. I could get a lot of good dick.
All
is what I'm
right.
Yeah.
She needs a good
dick.
There's dicking. Bart, and then there's Rachel, Frankenstein.
Ah, boy, oh boy.
That music.
Yes! It's in your blood. It's in the blood of all Frankensteins. It erases the soul. Then words are useless. Your grandfather used to play it to the creature he was making.
And it was you all the time.
Yes!
You played that music in the middle of the night.
Yes!
To get us into the laboratory.
Yes!
That was your cigar smoldering in the ashtray.
Yes!
And it was you who left my grandfather's book out for me to find.
Yes!
So that I would...
Yes!
Then you and Victor were...
Yes! Yes! Say it! Evos! My boyfriend!
Boy, oh, yeah, that's right. She does experience two large cocks.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
That's what ties those movies together for me.
Great.
She's double dicking features, what I call it when I watch both of them.
Someone can punch
Dan. She didn't die until like 2002.
Thank you.
2001?
I think so, yeah. Early 2000s.
But she wasn't in Spaceballs.
Nope. I don't know why. Well, I mean, I can guess why. She was probably busy doing other things, but yeah, I don't know.
It might have popped. might have helped slightly. I'm not saying Spaceballs is bad, but it might have
added
an extra dynamic to it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I don't know what she was doing at the time, and then it's just weird that her last project was the second Cosby Show, which she was good in, but, you know.
Did you ever see Paper Moon?
No, I still have not seen that film.
God.
I'm an asshole for not seeing that movie.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah,
if you're a Madeline Kahn fan, you have
to. I know.
Because she's more of a bitch than she is in Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
But she's still freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
She's about as ditzy as she is in, you know, Blazing Saddles.
Okay.
But she's a bitch.
Yeah. She's not dumb in High Anxiety, but it's just funny.
I love
her character in
That's
that.
My favorite of all of them.
Yeah.
Because, for one, it's like I get all the references.
Sure.
I'm Hitchcock obsessed, but not cock obsessed. And also, it's just, I'm fond of Mel Brooks as the leading man. So, I love Gene Wilder, but I also just love Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
And so.
It was good when he finally came into his own and was able to do that. And it was, and it's easy to write for yourself, I think.
Yeah.
You know what you're good at.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to think. I think the yummy sound is one of my favorite moments.
Yes, too. I was going to say that, too. I agree.
Oh, do you like it? I made it myself.
What?
You made a yummy sound. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. You just made a yummy sound. I don't know why that is so funny.
The word yummy in itself is funny.
No. And then, okay, my favorite acting bit outside of the stabbing himself in the leg is the, you haven't touched your food. There, I touched it. Are you happy? That part is good. That part is fucking just amazing. He plays
when you're a kid, how many times do you feel like that's what you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you haven't touched your piece. Fine, I did. You have it?
Right? Yep.
Nice. I like the bookcase.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I like to put the kendo back. Right. But I just like, I don't know, the slapstick of it. Mm-hmm.
just seeing him, his face, yes, and half his body squished, yeah, between the wall and that.
Now listen to me very carefully.
And again, to be able to have you're putting a good actor in that role. And
he sounds like a cartoon character, too.
How, I just don't understand how people don't understand how to do parody,
yeah, you know,
anymore. It's because, I think it's because they have no love for what they're parodying.
Yes,
you have to like what you're parodying. Have to like it. You know, like, okay, fine, if you're going to go make disaster movie, you have to actually love disaster movies to make that.
Because you know what the tropes are.
Right.
And if you don't know what it is that makes that movie good,
yep,
then there's no way. I mean, people are down on Hot Fuzz so much, and it's, mm-hmm, like, no. We grew up, I mean, our podcast is going to be Con Air and Die Hard,
right,
and I grew up on those movies, yeah, where it was like the cop buddy movie.
Yep.
And they were able to pick what makes those movies so brilliant and likable and exploit them.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, take them and run with them, and that's what makes that a good movie and also a good satire.
Sure.
Whereas now it's like, oh, this, like, we're gonna take this and like make it silly,
right?
Or we're just gonna throw this character from this movie, yep, Napoleon Dynamite, randomly into this other thing.
God, just, I don't understand that.
Have you seen Not Another Teen Movie?
I don't know.
That is one of the few good ones. Uh-huh. It was, like, probably one of the last good ones. Uh-huh. Where it's like, and he, I watched the, I don't remember who the director is, but I watched the interview with him, and I think watching the behind the scenes gave me a lot more appreciation for that film,
mm-hmm,
because I found out that the director loves teen movies.
Okay, see, that's
like,
fine.
He was saying why this scene, like the Breakfast Club scene, mm-hmm, was the John Hughes references and right, stuff, like saying why he wanted it like he made it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I appreciate this a lot more, knowing that you appreciate what you're making fun of.
Right. Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people latched onto the airplane model. The model set by the film Airplane. But Airplane even...
But they did it wrong.
Yeah, I know. But, that, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, even though... But even with Airplane, because I do love Airplane... they're making fun of stuff, but they were also obsessed with the shit they were making fun, mm-hmm, of. So they clearly had to have some affection for it. It wasn't hate.
Oh,
and even that, like, even a lot of some of the more silly stuff still was motivated or original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, they didn't steal the joke from another movie
put
it in their own movie and say, ha, see, remember how that was funny?
No, they stole serious lines from another movie. Yeah. A lot of those lines were stolen directly, and they're like, let's put something funny around those lines.
And they're still incredibly odd and funny.
Yes.
Right.
Because they're just weird.
And I mean, and a lot of the... Now, not all the... That's a different kind of film in that... And again, it's a different kind of film. That's a straight-up parody.
Yes.
You know, it's not what... It's not like an homage, pastiche, whatever you want to call, mm-hmm, Young Frankenstein. But because they've got the lead, plays it semi-straight, but it's like a goofy kind of straight.
Yeah.
Where then you've got... You've also got Liam... Not Liam Neeson. Jesus Christ.
That would be interesting.
Thank you. What's his name? Why, my mind is blanking. White hair.
Leslie Nielsen?
Yes, Leslie Nielsen, playing it totally straight. Mm-hmm. Just playing like that no-nonsense cop character type, and same with Robert Stack and everybody else. They're just doing that. And, you know, the idea of that is funny within the context, yeah, of it. But then, like, even the Zucker Brothers don't know how to do that anymore, because they produce some of the movies, and it's just fucking...
Yeah, it's like, yeah, even in, like, Airplane, I think one of my... favorite lines is one of the most subtle ones, because, like, what were the choices tonight? Chicken or fish? That's right, I had lasagna.
Lasagna.
And just goes on from there.
Yep, keeps going.
No one acknowledges it, no one goes, "Whar!" You know, just, yeah, like, he says it and they go.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can miss it if you aren't really paying attention.
Right.
There's a lot in that movie you can miss if you're not.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Let me think. I'm just gonna sit here and
think. Well, this is the same thing as, like, you know, we went and saw Weird Al, and he's all like, okay, my friends and I in college, instead of getting drunk or high watching, mm-hmm, Anchorman, we would just have a lot of cookies and watch like R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet over and over and over again. And this was back when there were only six episodes. Wait. I think there were six episodes.
Mm, those were the days.
And it
was so innocent. Though.
Now there's like 52.
Oh, no.
But it was hilarious. It was just so brilliant. And so then Weird Al did it.
Yeah.
And we were so excited. It was eh.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciated that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then South Park did it. And we were so excited because they actually, I'm pretty sure they watched it almost as many times as we had.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think I saw that one.
Really? When Tom Cruise is trapped in the closet.
Oh, wait, yes, I did. Yes. Okay, I did see that. You're right. Okay.
And it was like, but then other stuff Weird Al does where it's like, not just, you know, those stupid things like, what if God smoked cannabis or
mm-hmm,
something?
Mm-hmm.
It's, he takes the parody of it,
mm-hmm.
Or he does the music of it. He takes a parody, so it's like matched up, but he's also making fun of something else at the same time.
Sure.
So there's levels to it,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's not just like, oh, I'm just gonna match funny words to it.
Yeah.
And he also, like, puts so much work into it, and it's, like, technically perfect.
Yes.
And that's another thing why this movie works.
Yeah,
but
yeah exactly. Like, a good example of how Weird Al puts a lot of work and, like, research into his and love into his is when he did the Saga Begins.
Uh-huh.
He wrote that almost entirely from leaks and
about
information
Phantom
on
Menace,
the internet,
right,
and
yeah.
then he
mm-hmm.
went and saw a week early premiere of it,
uh-huh.
and only had to make some minor changes to the song.
That's yeah. funny.
But he spent so much time on the internet researching and learning, and
yeah.
just kind of probably knowing how Star Wars works.
Yeah,
to put that song together.
That's crazy.
Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, damen und herren, from what was once an inarticulate mass of lifeless tissues, may I now present a cultured, sophisticated man about town. Hit it!
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes or cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dressed up like a million-dollar trooper, trying mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper.
Cooper, Cooper!
Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their midst.
Stuff and you can tell that they're not just, you know, they're not pop, he's not, you know, jacking off pop culture, which is what the new stuff is,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, we all know what this is, let's
right.
make fun of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It, he's taking genre and making, like, looking at it, and he, all of his movies are kind of like dissecting what makes it funny.
Yeah, it's sure. a lot less superficial than the modern ones are.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
right. No, that's very true. I think I don't know where I was going to go with that. I'm just totally lost in this one. I just love this movie so much. It's impossible for me
it's
to really
to
express any
yeah.
more about it. Because, you know, again, there's a lot of work put into it. Stop it, cat. There are cats here, by the way, at Ford Awesome Studios. Like, it just looks beautiful. It's shot, the score is really good. I love the theme song. The, everything that Peter Boyle does is pretty, it's pretty dead on to the original Frankenstein monster. Like, the kind of grasping the air. I'm trying to remember, I don't remember what the reason the original did that. Well, was it light? Or was it sound? Did anybody here remember? Ari, do you recall?
Of what?
Well, the original Frankenstein monster kind of does that grasping the air thing, too. And I can't right now recall why he does it. But it's something that
it's
he really wants.
Light.
I can't
well,
remember.
He was afraid of fire, too.
Right. But
yeah.
I just can't
remember.
But
remember.
Either way.
It's been so long.
But Peter Boyle's just, like, again, plays it totally straight. You could play it really stupid. And I do think a lot of people, if you were to put that scene in a movie now, the tap dancing scene, people would think it was some kind of joke about being retarded just because of the way he sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But, Yeah, I don't know. I have a cat rubbing up against the microphone stand. Thank you, cat. Mm-hmm. That was very nice of you.
Do you know off the top of your head how much it costs to make...
I do not. I don't remember. I remember for back then it was fairly inexpensive because I know they had to keep it under a very tight budget. And
yeah, it probably wasn't as expensive to shoot in black and white then either.
Right.
Well, now it's not anymore because you can digitally do it black and white.
Yeah, that's very true.
But if you wanted to shoot in true black and white nowadays, it'd probably be really expensive.
One of my other... one of the best characters in this is not in it that long, but Kenny Marr playing the inspector. Just that. I mean, he always plays Germans for Mel Brooks because he was the Nazi and the producers as well.
Right, right.
But that character is just so good.
Oh, it was the arm...
Yep.
I love how he puts the darts in his arm, too. Like,
that's great.
That's being aware of your character right there. Like, mm-hmm. You know, to even think to do that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he did that once, just, you know, he just did it. And yeah. And they're like, keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope he had something in there to stab it into and it wasn't...
Right, not just his arm.
Apparently, he was quite a method actor. Apparently, he wore his outfit from the producers all the time, and it stunk, like, to high heaven because he didn't wash it. He was nuts. He realized he was crazy after he did it, though, so he probably wasn't that crazy in this film, I don't think.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, right? It's just weird to me that somebody like Mel Brooks would go to, like, he just found this... Parody was somehow what he decided to do after doing The Producers. I mean, he won an Oscar for his first movie, for the first screenplay he ever wrote.
Right.
And then to go... I'm just not sure why he decided to go the parody route. I mean, he was a sketch writer, and that makes sense.
Right.
But I'm not sure where it came from.
I guess it's just he likes it. Yeah. He's like, I got my Oscar, now I can do whatever the hell I want to.
That's,
you know?
True. I mean, he did have two very successful TV shows. He had Get Smart, which was a parody of Spy Things,
mm-hmm,
which,
true.
Again, was brilliant. Then he had a show called When Things Were Rotten, and it was a Robin Hood show that he did.
Okay.
Really?
I don't know how many seasons it lasted, one or two. But again, that's clearly where Robin Hood Men in Tights came from.
Yeah.
He was just given the opportunity with Prince of Thieves to do it.
Yeah.
I'd like him to make another movie just to make up for some of the last ones, but I just don't think it would happen. I don't think anybody'd let him. They're trying to do Spaceballs too, but I don't know if that'll ever happen. I know they did a Spaceballs cartoon.
They should do a prequel.
A prequel.
If they're gonna
do anything, yeah, absolutely. But and then he could make it bad.
And purposely, like, fuck with the storyline.
Yep, and make it awful. Yeah, wouldn't make any sense. all right. Well, I really wish I had more original things to say about this. I wrote all these notes. Yes, Eric. Would you like to share with the rest of you?
I was told a long time ago, and apparently Cloris Leachman was too, that Frau Blücher
mm-hmm.
meant glue.
Glue, right.
In German.
Yeah.
But according to that, it doesn't.
Really?
It doesn't even sound like the German word for glue.
That's funny.
And apparently Mel Brooks had said the point of the joke is as though someone's yelling Miss Jones and then the horses go crazy.
Right.
So it's just stupid.
There's a
Which
lot.
Is totally something I would do.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that. That's what I assumed. Like, they hear, they say the name and the horses freak out.
Oh yeah, you didn't know it was supposed to be glue?
No.
I didn't either. I had heard that later, and I was like, oh, I guess that's funny if that's true, but I always
just assumed it's because, you know, she's a scary person, and so every time they say it, lightning and horses, like scary.
That's funny.
Mel Brooks sometimes differently tells
his stories. Yeah, he does. He makes stuff up, or he gets into the moment, and he's just all about the storytelling and not about being accurate.
But. Yeah.
Because I saw him, he talked live at a Q&A for, not this one, but for Blazing Saddles. And some of the stories are similar. Some of the stories are not. He's like a...
He likes to fuck with history.
He does. And he's an egotist. There's no doubt about it. Right. But, like, lovable. He's lovable.
Yes.
I don't think I would have wanted to be in the writer's room with him on your show of shows, because I've heard bad things. But, yeah. Whatever, he's still a genius.
I mean, I've heard bad things about the Smothers Brothers, I've heard bad things about everybody,
so it's like,
you gotta take them on their work, I guess.
Exactly, no, you don't have much of a choice, and he was a really nice guy when I saw him.
So. Roald Dahl used to beat his children, doesn't mean I dislike his books.
But it does mean you want to beat your children, though, now.
It does encourage.
Not supposed to?
No. Fuck. No. I'm sorry.
I gotta go let my kids out of the basement.
Wait, we don't have kids.
Let's move the kids out of my basement.
Come on now.
Oh, the cats.
Wait, we don't have a basement.
That's what the
hell are you doing?
I gotta let somebody's kids out of somebody's basement. It's gonna take some time.
Oh, shit. Thank you, Kat. So, yeah, that was... All right. Thank you, guys, for joining us. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ari. Thank you, Jen. All right, so everybody...
You're welcome.
All right, good. Thank you, Jen. Jen, do you want to thank you say you're welcome back to me?
One vice president of the podcast.
Yeah, if you're the vice
president. If you think you're welcome, then I can say that.
Okay, I do think I'm welcome. All right.
Good.
All right, everybody, thank you. This has been Young Frankenstein. Have a very happy Thanksgiving, and have a good thing.
Now, that brain that you gave me, was it Hans Delbrück's? No. Ah. Good. Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
Are you saying that I put an abnormal brain into a 7.5 foot long, 54 inch wide gorilla?
What?
Is that what you're telling me?
I was one of 18 boys, then we all wore corduroys. I was the roughest of the gang, cause my breakfast used to end.
Comedy on Vinyl is recorded at Fort Awesome Studios in beautiful downtown Burbank, California. Our producer is Mike Warden, our host is Jason Klom, and he's also the editor. Comedy on Vinyl is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. You can check out all of our other podcasts, books, videos, other audio stuff, probably some writing, at stolendress.com. And please check out Comedy on Vinyl at facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, twitter.com/comedyonvinyl, and please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us highly, and spread the word.
On the floor it looks so dark, like a man been flattened out. I said to her, Mary Ann, your carpet does look queer. She said, that's my first old man, and whispered in my ear. Never let your braces dangle, dingle, dingle, dangle. Poor old Fort, he got scored and dragged right through the mangle. Over the rollers he rolled.